Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Hello, my wonderful, wonderful audience. I'm smiling because I created a little engineering chaos at the start of the show today. But you are my anchor. I get to talk with you every week. I get to share wonderful people with you every week. And I'm really glad to be here. This is Dr. Peter Breggin, and you're listening to Refounding America and Reclaiming Ourselves, because they go together. I'm going to have a really interesting guest whom I think will really emphasize how much our standing up for America has to do with our standing up for ourselves, for our beliefs, for our own courage. This is a TV show, a real one. It is on Brighteon right now, and it is also on Roku, and that's on TV sets. And you probably can hear me on PRN .live as a radio show as well. Again, looking forward to being with you and to spending some time together. Hello again, my wonderful, wonderful audience. No, the Chinese communists are not breaking in and putting up a smiley face that was actually scowling. It's called technological incompetence. I all of a sudden had smiley faces and sour faces on my screen. I have no idea. They're sitting there in the corner now, and they're grinning, they're laughing. It's a kind of like a hallucinatory experience. Much improved over that is the appearance of Jody O'Malley, whom I have heard on the radio. She is a nurse. And there is a on America Out Loud, where Ginger and I have our weekly America Out Loud Pulse, where we talk together. If you ever want to see me and Ginger together, go to America Out Loud and look up America Out Loud Pulse. And we come on every Thursday night at 5 o'clock, and we play, we talk, we get sad. We interview people, and you can really get to see a bit more of what my amazing partner is like. And Jody O'Malley is also on America Out Loud. She's got one night out of the five that the nurses are on. She'll tell you about that. Jody is a heroic person. She, you may have seen her on some of the conservative TV that played the Veritas, interviewed her and played a film, a little recording she made of staff people at her hospital talking about the vaccines and how they are making their patients sick and how they're causing myocarditis, but how they can't talk about it. And for that, the Arizona Medical Board went after her. But as they went after me back in 1985, my medical board, for making remarks on Oprah Winfrey, critical of psychiatric drugs, they picked on somebody bigger than they thought. And they exonerated me and apologized to me. And the Arkansas authorities did the same with you. Am I right, Jody?
Yeah, that's correct. Excuse me. That's correct.
Welcome to the show. Would you like to chat a bit about your own self and the book you're working on? And then maybe we could at some point play a 2.5 minute clip of you on the Veritas film. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds good. Thank you for having me, Dr. Bregan. It's been 15 months since my protected disclosure as a whistleblower came out through Project Veritas. And it's been a journey. I never thought I would leave the bedside as a nurse. My credentials, I guess, or what I did in the hospital was ICU and ER primarily. And then when COVID struck, they put me in as hospital supervisor. So I saw, you know, the whole gamut from the BS admissions to the safety signals that weren't being noticed, and under reporting of, you know, vaccine injuries that should have been reported to VAERS and so on. But it's been a journey nonetheless, and I now have a 5-day-a-week Nurses Out Loud program where I'm the host on Friday show. And I also have a book coming out that will be donated. The proceeds will be donated to those affected by this COVID narrative, and in so many different ways, right? We had, you know, the mass exodus of nurses, yeah, you know, wanting to honor their own autonomy and being displaced and so on and so forth. That it's, there's so many different avenues we could go down. So I'm excited just to have a conversation with you today.
Yeah. Where'd you find the courage? What motivated you? What in the world were you thinking when you took on the authorities? Was it the first time in your life you had stuck your neck out like that?
To that degree, absolutely. Yes.
Usually it is. COVID has just done that to people.
It really has. Everybody's been shaken, right? In some way, shape, or form. These last three years have shaken us in different ways. And for me, it was my ethical principles. I mean, I took an oath to protect the patient. And since I'm a nurse and I'm a mandatory reporter, I need to report safety issues that I see. And it started off in March of 20 when we shut down, you know, the world, essentially stopped educating our kids, and really just a complete violation of the patient's Bill of Rights. You know, we're not supposed to put patients in and seclude them. Coercion isn't supposed to happen. We're supposed to honor autonomy. We're supposed to follow evidence-based practice, which is the best available science that we were supposed to follow. And everything we did was completely against it. Mm-hmm. But as far as like my character and integrity, who I am as a person, I'll tell you, I was kicked out of 2 public schools in the inner city of Chicago by the 6th grade for fighting the bully.
For what?
For fighting the bully.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I always stood up for myself. I always had a deep respect for myself as a person and for others that maybe didn't have a voice. And so, you know, this journey that I've been on through life, I can see how, you know, the paths that I have chosen has led me to where I'm at today. I actually, Dr. Bregan, didn't become an RN until I was 39 years old. So that was 9 years ago. And I was in the pinnacle of my career. I had done so many different things throughout my life, and nursing truly was a calling. And so I think with the grit and the grace that I have, you know, honed in on, if you will, from being a young child, really gave me, and my faith. My faith was number one. I'll throw that out there. My faith in God and recognizing where we're at in the world today. I do see this as an end times prophetic prophecy being fulfilled. We're in a war of good versus evil. And And it's going to take those that are being called to step up and speak truth and light into the world.
It is amazing to me how many of the people who have taken stands are people who believe in God and feel that God has called them to do it. I mean, Ginger and I feel that way. It was a big deal for us to give up the whole lifelong trajectory of being, you know, the conscience of psychiatry and having an identity like that, and then realizing, hey, I'm going to play a much smaller role, but I'm getting into the, we have to go into the COVID issues. We can't stand on stuff we've done for years before. And it was mainly my thinking about what would I tell God about why I didn't do anything. You know, I wasn't going to tell him. Well, at the time I was 84. Same as Luke, I was 84 years old. He didn't like that explanation. I told him I'd done my share. Haven't I impressed you, you know? That didn't work.
No.
So I was left with no choice. Basically, he said, look, I've given you gifts. They weren't to waste.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, for me, you know, like I said, my eyes were wide open in March. And so I made a conscious decision because I know I'm commanded to choose faith over fear, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So that's what I did. I really immersed myself in public health policy and, in science, and everything that we were doing was, against everything that we know to be true. And so in June of 2020, I looked up to God and I said, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done educating on a social media platform. And then, you know, I would get these witnesses to continue, like, thank you. Thank you for speaking out. You know, you brought peace to my soul. Or I was going to commit suicide and I didn't because of your messages. And it's just like, oh my goodness,
that's
Lord.
Wonderful.
Okay, well, I guess I'm on this path. And so, you know, essentially a year or so after that was when he told me what to do, and that was to pull out my phone and start recording.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, did you lose your job right away, or did what happened with your job?
So as soon as my story was released, I did receive multiple complaints against the nursing board, or against my license, sorry. And then I had to undergo an investigation with the nursing board. In answer to those complaints, and I stood on my ethical principles. And so they ordered me to undergo a formal ethics evaluation, and I did. And then I met in front of the board a couple months later, and they dismissed all charges. The Arizona State Board of Nursing was actually, you know, I think ethical in how they handled the case, because they realized that, you know, we can't silence a dissenting opinion. When a nurse recognizes safety issues, she has a duty to report that. And since I work for the federal government, IHS, Indian Health Services, they weren't listening to me. Everything I asked them to do as far as reporting, you know, receiving a patient in the triage and telling them, nobody is noticing these safety signals. We are in an experimental trial right now, guys. We are the ones who are collecting the data. And if we're not noticing them, then how are we to collect the data? And all I asked multiple times was for them to put on the triage note of if you've been vaccinated, if so, when. And that would alert the provider, the nurse that's going into the room. Maybe we should look at these symptoms, and that could be a cause. But I quickly realized they didn't care. They didn't want to know. They just wanted a needle in every arm. And, you know, and that was, you know, that was really hard for me. You know, the refusal of early treatment. Never in the history of medicine have we told somebody that you have a disease that could potentially kill you, but we're going to wait until it's actually killing you for us to do anything about it. And then what we're going to do is give you another experimental medication and abandon everything we know to be true about respiratory issues. And then I found out that there was price tags associated with it. And it just was this whole mess that I just couldn't turn a blind eye away from. And so for work, they put me on administrative leave, and then they investigated me for about another year. And then they wound up firing me right before Christmas. And so, it's been a hard time. It's really kind of rough. It's like I was getting paid, but I was making about 40% less than what I should have been making. I'm just trusting the Lord to lead me. He doesn't bring you to the fire and not see you through it.
Well, it's been our experience throughout life. I mean, we do weigh, and Ginger and I alone, and then for 40 years together, we weigh the challenges. And each time we've made a really difficult decision that was quite threatening to us, we have just found new friends and gotten new faith and become convinced once again that at least for us, if we do what's right, we get almost like protection. It's something we've just felt. And I was thinking about you. I think you're the first person I've had on the air who's talked about standing up to bullies and getting in trouble for it. And I always did that. I did that throughout elementary school, junior high, and high. All 5'4", 135 pounds of me. It didn't matter how big you were. You did not pick on any of my friends, or you would regret it. You've got that same. I don't know what it is. It's partly chutzpah. I mean, I could have gotten badly hurt. I never did. I certainly stopped some bullies dead in their tracks, and they didn't want to fight anymore. And one time I did start a fight because I played so badly in a ball game. I got mad and I started a fight after we lost the game with somebody on the other side of the team. And he flattened me onto the ground in 5 seconds. I've never told this story. I reached up to defend myself, and it went under a school fence, and I couldn't move my left arm. He's sitting on top of me. He's 20 pounds heavier, and he looks at me, and he thinks to himself, you poor jerk, I don't know what you're doing. So he gets up and just lets me go. So, I mean, it's, you know, if you don't get lessons from these things, what do you get? You know, be on the right side. Mm-hmm. There's no guarantees. I'm not suggesting to people we're guaranteed that it's going to turn out the way we want because of our faith. But I think it seems to work for so many of us.
Well, you know, like I said, in June of 2020, when I said I'm done, because I had received more negative comments and anger from people then from March to June of 2020, than I received when my story was released, you know. And I remember when we were flying back in town after it went viral with 5 million views in like 2 days, I had my community reach out and say, you know, we have a home that you guys can go to. You, me and my son, I'm a single mom, he's 13. And I was going to go there and kind of hide out, if you will. And my 13-year-old said to me, he said, Mom, I don't know why we have to leave. You have been following what God wanted you to do this entire time. Mm-hmm. What, don't you think that he's going to see you through it? And Dr. Bregan, I mean, he has not only seen me through it, but my spirit is constantly renewed. You know, I feel like I submitted to the will of God in June of 2020. And I said to him, Lord, you use me. Use me the way you want. I just wanted him to use me the way I wanted to be used. And that was on my 12-hour shifts at the hospital. I didn't want to be used speaking out and being attacked on social media. I just wanted to, you know, just affect the people that he put in front of me. but he had other plans. He said, no, you are going to educate the masses. And it's a good thing, because when I realized the importance of having to tell my story in print form with the book I have coming out, it's really cool because I can use a lot of my posts that people can see my journey.
Yeah.
Beginning, you know what I mean? And I was like, well, Lord, your will, not my own. And that's the space that I have lived in diligently for the last 3 years.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, I think I'll wait to play the segment I found, which is a short segment of your experience of being an undercover whistleblower. And I think we'll start it when we get to the second segment. That way we can have something to look forward to that is really interesting and unusual. I'm surprised they couldn't find some law against your recording what was going on.
Well, they, like I said, they did finally fire me, but it's for reasons. I mean, it took them 15 months, Dr. Bregan, yeah, to come up on with something, you know, on me. And essentially, it just holds no weight because I exposed what I exposed for patient safety issue, along with several other things that a whistleblower can whistleblow on. And they just essentially had to make a move. And I'm glad they did. I'm missing the paycheck coming every 2 weeks, no doubt, but it also brings my case forward. I was kind of stuck there in this space. And, you know, my goal is to file charges against Biden and Becerra and Fauci. That's my goal. And I don't want to settle. I told them I'm not mediating with them. And here we are. So it'll be interesting to see how the story unfolds.
So you didn't take a little money and run. You're going to fight it right through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I was amazing. A mom. I was 16 and pregnant and married to somebody who was quite older than me and out on my own with two kids at the age of 20. That I know what I'm made of. And I think a lot of people, they are so comfortable. And they don't want to risk losing any of their worldly comfort. And like I said, and probably, you know, you're the same type of person. It's like, I know what I'm made of, and you could take away all of my creature comforts, but I have to answer. I have to sleep at night, right? And rest. I have to answer to my adult children and my 13-year-old. And then I also, I'm going to answer to God one day. And that's what's more important to me, is my relationship with our Father and not with, you know, my bank account.
Very well said. Does your book have a title yet?
Yes, it's called Rare Courage, Doing What's Right When You're Surrounded by Wrong.
That's great. That's really good. When do you think you'll have it out?
I'm thinking in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, really?
I'm not a business. Well, I'm not going to say I'm not. I am learning how to be a businesswoman now that my hospital career is over. And it's only over because, not because my RN license is, you know, is in any way, my license is intact, but I can't go back to that sick care system. I can't go back to physicians not being able to practice medicine. I mean, our doctors these days literally type in a diagnosis code and they get populated medications that they can use. Even though they may know something works better, their hand is tied. So they're not practicing at their full authority, and they're just minions, I think, of the insurance company hospital administrator system. And I can't be a part of that anymore.
I really appreciate that. We'll be back with Jody O'Malley in a couple of minutes, and we'll see your video. Well, hello, wonderful audience again. What an interesting woman this Jodi O'Malley is. And let's put up the little Project Veritas interview of her that includes a piece of her staff talking about how they can't talk about the vaccine adverse effects.
I want to show that the darn vaccine is full of shit.
Dr. Gonzalez is one of our emergency room doctors at Phoenix Indian Medical Center.
And she's a federal employee?
Correct.
Now you got this guy in room 4 who got his second dose of vaccine on Tuesday, has been short of breath.
He's got prone myocarditis.
Yes.
Oh, this is bullshit.
Let's see.
Probably myocarditis due to the vaccine.
Right.
But now they're not going to blame the vaccine.
Well,
because they want to shove it under the...
Yeah.
Under the mat.
She was referring to that patient, that 30-something-year-old patient that had congestive heart failure.
And in that particular patient's case, it was not reported.
No.
May I see your badges? You're Jodi O'Malley, with the Department of Health and Human Services. This is the United States government identification. I'm looking at the CDC website. It says that you're required to report adverse events following vaccinations. One of those would be congestive heart failure.
That's a huge one.
Were there other instances that they didn't report?
Oh, I've seen dozens of people come in with an adverse reaction.
Yeah, it's really sad. She had just come back from surgery, from leave.
So what are we looking at here?
You're looking at me transferring her to a higher level of care that could handle her condition.
And this is a colleague at your hospital who got sick.
She didn't want to take it because of her religious beliefs. And she was coerced into taking it.
Why are you choosing to blow the whistle? It's not what a lot of people would do. They're scared, they're afraid. Are you afraid?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm afraid because my faith lies in God and not man. This is evil at the highest level. You have the FDA, you have the CDC, that are both supposed to be protecting us.
Are you afraid they're going to retaliate against you?
Yeah. I'm a federal employee. What other federal employees do you see coming out?
But you put your faith in God.
Amen.
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 Any thoughts about it as you look at that again? Any comments? Anything goes through your mind? You're having a lot of feelings.
Well, yeah.
Share them with us.
You know, I go through this and it's been 15 months, but My coworker, who I call Angel in the book, there are millions like her, I believe. And so this isn't an isolated incident. We're seeing this happen. We're seeing people dropping dead on TV. Mm-hmm. We're seeing children, you know, dying. And so I look back at that. And I did not know what was going to come of it. You know what I mean, Dr. Reagan? I didn't know. I mean, in my heart, I wanted, oh my gosh, we see this and now we're going to change policy. But nothing's happened at the hospital. They're still doing the same thing. And, you know, just to sit back and say, okay, Lord, like, you know, what this, you're guiding this whole thing. And I just listened to you. And so now I see like how he's moving. And like you said, there's so many of us that are called and we're talking about the Lord, which we haven't talked about him for so long. It hasn't been a public display of affection, really, you know? And I know for me, you know, it's been my relationship with him has always been kind of a personal one. But I knew his voice and I knew when he called me to do this, I answered it. And, you know, it's just, it's sad. It's so sad that people aren't really awakened yet, or that the spirit of fear is really just what motivates people. And then it's really sad, because I wish more people would, you know, heed the call that, you know, he's asking from us to do. And what that means is, like, first of all, submitting. And, you know, what I mean, we say in our Father's prayer, you know, your will be done. You know, your will be done. Everybody's living in their own will. And we have to realize, like, why were we created? Why are we here living and breathing right now in 2023? What purpose did he have for us? And I just want so many people to look back at their relationship. And I don't know, it's so emotional. You know, I'm sorry. I feel like I'm speaking in circles. I got to get back with this.
No, I think you're doing really, really good. You know, one of the things in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, COVID-19, the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. One of the things that I found was that as I got into looking at all of the people who were at the level of Fauci or a little below that, but people who had a lot of power in this and who really identified with the globalists rather than with America, they really did. That these people, none of them had a belief in God. It's very interesting. They all resented the idea of individualism, even though they were enormous individuals in their own minds and in the minds of many other people. They didn't want other people to be individualists. They wanted people to be serfs, basically, and to be, or cogs in their wheel. They knew what was best. They wanted to reorganize the world, quite literally to reorganize the world and to shape it in their own form. They had authors to support them, you know, about human beings being godlike someday. But they never meant everybody. They always meant themselves, the elite group. Kind of going back to the days where the king thought he was appointed by God and therefore he could do anything he wanted. But they didn't even think they were appointed because they didn't believe in God. So it always, but such power.
Yeah.
And it's very surprising how consistent all of that is when you read them. They have no interest in the United States. It's all about what's going to happen to you, to man, humankind, you know, to the, how they're going to organize people and how they're going to get the most money and the most power. It comes down to, I think, the tradition of empire building that's been with us since before the birth of Christ. It's been with us in the Old Testament, all the empires vying and trying to control humanity. It's been with us a long, long, long time. I've been learning more and more about that. I'm gonna write some about that.
Please do. I do have your book, and I've had it for quite some time now, and I actually used a lot of your citations in my lawsuit. So
I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah, you know, if you didn't do that, I wouldn't have had it, you know, to use. So that, here's another example, right? It's another example of how, you know, these globalists and these elitists, they don't believe in God. They think they are God, you know? Yeah. That's the big difference. That's what's guiding them, is they think they're God and they're going to change climate and food and everything else that they want. You know, I'd say, what does a man want who has all the money in the world? And that's power. And that's how they get their power. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Did you ever get to have to deal with children, giving them vaccinations and watching them being vaccinated? Or?
No, absolutely not. I never would have done it. But in our facility, they brought people in essentially like cattle in their cars. And they just had mass injection campaigns out by a tent, and people just rolled up in their car, you know, because it's not safe to be outside, right? That's what they were telling us. So they had mass vaccination campaigns on our campus every day.
Was it a facility attached to a medical school?
No, it's called Phoenix Indian Medical Center. It's a hospital.
Oh, that's right. It's a Indian hospital.
Yeah, correct. For Native Americans. And they put the fear of God in them. And even if they didn't, well, just like my coworker who wound up passing away, you know, we worked together in the COVID unit, you know, from the beginning. And then in August, you know, she succumbs to the coercion of getting injected, and she was fine throughout COVID and lived her life normally. Even though she had multiple comorbidities, she wasn't afraid to live her life, and she did. And, you know, she gets the shot, and 2 weeks later, she's in the hospital, and a couple days after that, intubated and passed away very shortly after.
Had to be enraging and heartbreaking and all those emotions at once.
It was. I mean, there's so much to the story, you know, that I have. And that's why I felt the need to write a book, you know, about it, is because I think why my exposure really impacted people the way that it did was because I found out through reading your book and several others and doing all the research, is that when fear is driving people, they lose the ability to critically think. And the only way to really get them out of that slumber or to awaken them is to hit them on an emotional level. And I think that's what the Lord did with this story when he told me to record. And was it frightening? Absolutely. It was frightening. I had no idea what was going to happen to me, if I'd be arrested and, you know, my 13-year-old would be, you know, without his mom at home. You know, I had no idea. And, you know, but.
Well, you must have feared they'd take him away from you.
Yeah.
They've done that to people.
Right. I had no idea. But the thing was, is that it didn't matter. I didn't care if they pulled every hair out of my head. And I have a lot of hair. And I mean that 100%. There was no way that I was not going to do this, because if death or torture was, you know, at the end of it, then I would, you know, be up with my father and answer to him and hopefully hear, well done, good and faithful servant, you know?
Yeah, well, I do. I understand completely what you're saying. And I think it's just very good for people to hear it from you today and to see you having real feelings about it. You know, Ginger and I, we've had really very serious stresses during this whole time, but it always seems like life is better, you know, that when we take the risks, we feel like we're really at the, you know, really doing well and meeting new people and having more friends. And, you know, it's very, very special time for us. We feel like we're having a second lifetime together, actually.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
You know, we didn't die and go to heaven. We just started a new lifetime out of the blue.
Right here. And then that's what it's supposed to be, is to be renewed in spirit, you know? And I love that. You know, I'm close with my kids and my family, and we just drew even closer. Thank God.
That's wonderful, because so many families abandoned those of us who were truth telling.
Oh yeah, no, my two sons, when I told them what I was going to do, they're like, "Good for you, Mom." You
raised them well.
Yes, I mean, thank God. You know, they turned out as well as they did. You know, coming from a teenage mom, you know, who was a bartender for 10 years. but I can easily look back in my life and see everything that I've been through and how, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing now and how we got through it so well. No, we're all very, our relationship is strengthened in personal relationship with the Lord. We don't attend a particular church or, denomination, if you will. It's about a relationship. And those friends, you know, it's interesting, Dr. Bregan, because I didn't really lose many friends on Facebook. They still follow me. But I also know, too, that sometimes people are in our life for a season and a reason. And that's okay, because then it makes room for other people to come in your life, like you said. And yeah, I have amazing friendships that have come of it, like sisters and brothers.
Did you ever imagine that you would be running a 5-day radio show and getting on one day a week yourself?
No, I never thought I'd be an author. I never thought I'd be an influencer. I never thought of all those things. But I didn't look ahead. You know, when I said that I submitted to God and I was like, all right, Father, your will, not my own, I moved very carefully over these last 15 months. Very carefully. And I waited for signs. You know, should I do this? Should I talk to that person? Should I commit to this? And so it's kind of cool. It's like, I don't really have this like future goal or plan. I mean, although now I need to, because I need to get some income coming in. But, you know, over the last 15 months, I was able to still volunteer all of my time to getting out the message. And, yeah, I worked more then than I ever have in my life. I still do now. You know, I don't have a schedule, as you know. I'm just moving very carefully. And when Malcolm offered me the spot on Pulse, and then that was going well. And then I had more nurses reach out to me wanting to do podcast with me. And so I told Malcolm, he's the owner of America Out Loud, and I said to him, I'm going to do other podcasts with other nurses to help elevate their voice. And he said, whoa, maybe there's something here on America Out Loud for you guys. And he's just been amazing to work with. We're not silent. We can talk about anything that we want to. As you know, he doesn't dictate what we're doing. And with that, you know, we just had a very first nurses event that Nurse Freedom Network, Kimberly Overton, started about a year ago. We just had our very first nursing event that lasted for a whole day. And nurses from around the country, we gathered together to inspire and encourage other nurses to use their voice. We provided them education and resources of what they can do out of the allopathic sick care system. And I believe that, you know, we're in a movement. Things are changing. And that's exciting to be a part of. I mean, you know, I feel very blessed. So, like I said, I just move very carefully, making sure that I'm living in His will and not my own. Because the fame can get to people. You know what I mean? They get an ego.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I that's not me, and that's never going to be me. What you see is what you get. And I think people recognize that. And maybe that's why I haven't been attacked, you know, so much, because I'm authentically who I am with, and I make no apologies for it, but I do it in kindness and love. So maybe that's the difference.
Well, I think that's really true. I think that people do see who you are, that you're not an attacker, that you yourself are just doing what you believe is right. And it sounds right to these villains and some part of their conscious or unconscious life. Yeah. And I think that's true. I think that's true. How did you meet Malcolm? Malcolm actually just changed our lives in some ways.
He totally did. So Dr. McCullough, I had reached out to, I'd been following him since his, you know, Senate testimony in 2020. And actually, one of our ER doctors brought Dr. McCullough to our Pharmacy Therapeutics Committee in October of 2020 to advocate for early treatment. And so that's when I kind of first heard his name. And then I continued to follow him. And then once my story was released, I had, you know, essentially ran in the same circle as him. And, you know, we had a really good heart to heart and talking about, you know, us being on a mission, and which he doesn't speak too much of, but he has a strong faith. And one day he'll tell his story. I'll let him tell his story of his journey through COVID and, you know, his relationship with the Lord. But, you know, he's one of the brothers that I speak of, and he's my friend. And one day I get a call, or he texts me, and he said, Malcolm's going to reach out to you about doing a show. And I said, oh, with you? And then he said, no, your own one. Because I didn't know who Malcolm was.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, so then he reached out to me, and Malcolm said that he, my name was in the bunch, and he felt drawn to call me. And after a 5-minute conversation, essentially, he said, I'm going to offer this to you. I'm just going to go with, you know, what I'm feeling now. And I feel like you're the right person for it. Do you want to do it? And I said, absolutely. You know, you're going to have to help me because I'm not a radio host. But he was gracious and he was kind. And so then when I told him about the other nurses reaching out, I actually said to him, I want to give up my spot on the Pulse, and I want to brand myself with the nurses. I want to be on this mission with them. And that's how, what's his name? Tom Renz. He took my spot on the Pulse. And what an amazing, right? Like, you know, you can't make this up, Dr.
Yeah, Renz. It's wonderful. We're at the end now. I want to say that, you know, this is such a good show, folks, for those of you who have wondered, should you dare have the courage to save America? Have the courage. And thank you, Jody O'Malley, for being part of the freedom movement.